At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen today. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out. It's Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, today, folks, we have a very long overdue episode of the Bee Buzz, episode 24. I have, if you pay attention in the Discord room, you'll notice that I will go in and put a line underneath of the content whenever I'm cutting off the end of that input period for the Bee Buzz. So as an example, you know, somebody asks a question, I answer it and I say, okay, I'm going to record tomorrow. Let me go ahead and, you know, put a couple of lines underneath of that. And I'll say like end of Bee Buzz 24 notes or whatever it is. That way I remember when I go back to look at everything later to actually record the episode, I know where to go. I have a marker so I don't talk about the same things over and over again. I've moved this line down probably three times now. The last time was this morning, and I was like, all right, I got to get this knocked out. We got to get this squared away. So I am really pumped, happy, and excited to be here. It has been far too long. I have been putting forth a tremendous amount of effort lately to grow the YouTube channel because, as we've talked about several times before, I really think that it's cool and it's neat to be able to hear audio. It's really handy when you're driving down the road. And you're, you know, maybe you're operating a piece of machinery, you know, and you're just sitting there in the cab. And, you know, when you're doing things that have your visual attention, but you're still trying to gain knowledge or information, I think the podcast is tremendously useful and helpful and valuable for that. But there are a lot of things you really kind of need to see. It's a visual kind of activity and hobby and job. And it's really difficult for me to say, it's a box, and it's about this big by that big, and there's an entrance about 4 inches to the left of this. It's kind of tricky. But when you can go online and you can watch a video where I'm saying, see right here, this thing I told you about the other day on the podcast, it's right there in this spot. This is exactly what you want to see or what you don't want to see. So with that, I've just been putting forth a lot of time in trying to put out content that is hopefully going to be useful and valuable and a really good supplement for the podcast. Unfortunately, what I did is I kind of flipped things a little bit and I made that kind of the primary activity and the podcast the supplement. And it's really not the way it's designed to be because all of you have counted on me for a really long time to provide content for you in this format. And that's what I need to do. But while we're on that subject, I do want you to know I've been doing a thing for the month of September. It's a beekeeping tip of the day. Every day in this month, I'm putting out a quick 2 to 5 minute video about something bee related. So if you have the time, please log in. You know, it's just youtube.com/@@ beekeeping for newbies. And of course, it's N-E-W-B-E-E-S. And just go in there. Feel free to like, subscribe, put the playlist on. Let it play all the time when you're not doing anything to give me watch hours. That would be great. No, I'm just kidding. Please don't do that. Well, do whatever you want to do. I don't care. But check it out. There's a lot of stuff in there. I'm adding things pretty much every day. Like I said, I've done 9 tips of the day. The 9th one is going to be released at midnight tonight, Eastern time. I think I've got one that's, you know, the 5 things you're doing that are killing your beehives. There's another one is 5 reasons that you shouldn't become a beekeeper. And there's just a few other ones. So if you have a chance, please check that out and give me your feedback. Leave some comments. Let me know what you think. All right, I'm going to run through a few. I got a handful of updates I want to get you up to speed on. And then we'll jump into the questions and everything that you guys have posed either via email or in the Discord room over the past couple of weeks. So I am actually starting a master's program next month. Now, I never thought that I would go back to school. I finished up my first master's in 2003 and I was done. Like, I was just like, that's it. I'm never going back. I want nothing to do with it. Well, years ago, I was spending a lot of time outside. I mean, every fall would roll around. In addition to the stuff I was doing outside the rest of the year, when fall came around, I was in the woods. And I had just developed this passion for, you know, white-tailed deer and tracking them and learning their habits and understanding their diet and, you know, how their bodies change going into the fall so that they need to eat different things. And I was just really excited about it. I was watching all kinds of shows. And I just thought, you know, I'm going to go back to school and get a degree in wildlife biology. So my first college, when I graduated high school, I went to a community college. And there was a biology teacher there named Mrs. Luquire. And I thought, man, I wonder if she's still around, if she's still teaching there, or if she's moved on to something else. So I look around a little bit. I track down her contact info. She's still there, or at least was at the time. And I emailed her. I said, hey, Mrs. Luquire, it's Jeff. I was in your class back in sometime, a really long time ago in the 90s. And she's like, oh my God, Jeff, great to hear from you. I told her what I was thinking about doing. And she was, you know, excited and supportive. And it was really cool, you know, to kind of catch up with her after so many years. But when I started actually talking to colleges and schools about going back, it wasn't really the most straightforward thing. You know, I talked to them about what I was interested in, how passionate I was, what I wanted to do. And they were like, well, great. Yeah. So, you know, how many semesters of biology do you have? And I'm like, oh, I got 2 semesters of biology. Oh, okay. How much chemistry? And I'm none. How much physics? I'm like, well, I took physics in high school for the whole school year. And they're like, yeah, that's not going to do it. So if they were going to take my biology, I still needed basically 4 semesters of a total of, you know, 2 per subject in chemistry and physics. And that was just the start of my prereqs that I needed to take. And I realized, like, okay, I'm going to be tied up for at least a year, maybe a year and a half, just on prereqs before I can move over, you know, onto the wildlife biology pursuit, which, again, you know, my original undergrad and master's was all, you know, IT technology stuff. So there was no overlap. So once I kind of got that information and realized what was going to be required for me to move on with that program, I kind of respectfully declined and decided that I was just not going to get a degree in wildlife biology. So I put all those ideas and thoughts aside, went on with my life, and I was doing some research, checking some things out about some interesting opportunities. And, you know, I think I've told a lot of you all the stuff that my daughter's got going on. You know, she's out in Wyoming and she's working with some of the federal entities out there around, you know, environmental things tied to, I don't even know which department that she's working with, but it's something with like forestry, BLM, forestry, Bureau of Land Management. I just want to kind of qualify that so there's no confusion. So Bureau of Land Management, forestry, you know, Department of Interior, Department of Agriculture, so one of those entities out there is where she's spending her time. And quite frankly, I kind of got a little bit jealous. I was like, man, she's outside all the time in the fresh air, doing fun stuff, having a good time. And, you know, I thought, man, I would really, really like to be doing something that is like that kind of year round. Like beekeeping, it's really cool and fun and neat from like March to June, really, for me. Once I get into mid-June, we got the dearth and you're just fighting everything, like the bugs, the robbers, the hive beetles, varroa, wax moth, everything from June through September is just kind of a battle. So that's not the fun part. The fun part is really like April, May. But the other part about it, too, is that, again, it's labor intensive year round, because a lot of people think, OK, cool. Well, my 6-month beekeeping for the year is up. See you again in March or April. And there's a lot of off season activity, things you got to do to prep gear and paint things and clean things up, make new spaces. There's always something to do in beekeeping. And I thought, well, what if I just found a way or a path forward to be involved in something that was very relevant, tied to the environment, the various ecosystems that the wildlife on our national parks and places around the country, that, you know, something that I could do that would put me in that space. You know, I've had a chance to go to some beautiful parks. I was at Glacier a couple of years ago You know, I used to live down the road from Shenandoah. So there's like a lot of places that I've had a chance to go and to see, and it's a great atmosphere. It's a great place to go and hang out. So I thought, what can I do to kind of get paid to go hang out there? So that kind of led me to my journey, my new educational pursuit here. So I'm not going to give you all the details of where I'm going in the program and all that kind of stuff. And the only reason is because, you know, as everybody knows nowadays, if somebody doesn't like you, they don't just like send you a message and be like, hey, you're a meanie butt, I don't like you. Like, they try to get people fired. They go to their employers. They like, I can post them. That's why you see, like, I don't have social media, right? There's no Facebook for me. There's no Instagram for me or any of that. Because if I go online and I say something, then somebody's going to be like, oh, Jeff's a meanie butt, you need to fire him. And then people at the employer go, oh, yeah, Jeff, yeah, he's a meanie butt here too, we're going to fire him, or whatever they want to say. So I don't want to get involved in it. I don't want to play with that. So it's probably a little bit better and safer. I'll just, you know, once I'm all done, I'll be like, oh yeah, this is where I went. But for now, if you want to, we can just call it Harvard, close enough. So while I'm doing this master's at Harvard, I'll keep you guys updated on everything. Okay, on another note, and this is, I'm going to combine a little bit of a joke here with it, but I am not about to inherit anything from a Kenyan prince. But I did have a gentleman reach out to me from Kenya, and he is establishing with this group of people I'm going to call it a compound. When you hear compound, I always think of like the Branch Davidian, or I always think of something in a negative context. But he's forming this kind of like village-based community compound type of thing where they're working on a lot of sustainable agriculture and a variety of other activities. One of them is honeybees. He's really new to honeybees in general, new to beekeeping. Reached out and was like, hey, would you mind mentioning our GoFundMe page? We're probably about $3,000 short of where we want to be. Can you help us out? And I said, no, I probably can't do that. I don't know who you are. I don't know anything about this program. I'm not going to put a link to a GoFundMe anywhere on any of my stuff. I'm not going to ask any of my listeners to go and invest in something that I literally know nothing about. It is really, really easy to create a webpage, come up with a story, and then start telling the story when there's actually nothing going on. So, and the guy seems really nice. We had a couple of email exchanges back and forth. And what I said is, hey, I'm not going to support financially. I'm not going to ask other people to support financially. I will let people know, hey, this is where it is. This is where you can find them. If you want more information, let me know. I'll send you a link or whatever. But I'm just not tying it to me by posting it in my descriptions and links in other places. What I did offer is, if he would like me to, I'm going to help him set up a curriculum. I'm going to help teach some classes and see what I can do to kind of bring whatever expertise I can to kind of supplement and augment and help them out. I would love to go out there myself and physically hands-on help and show them how to do stuff. I think it would be absolutely amazing. But, you know, in the climate of the world and things just being goofy and weird, I don't know. You know, you get over there and you're working and you're getting things done, and then next thing you know, you can't fly anywhere because they decided to kick off World War III. Then I got to find a new Kenyan wife. And it's just a whole lot of logistics that I don't want to kind of deal with. So I'm probably not going to go there in person, but definitely going to be trying to help those folks out and seeing what we can do there. But I think it's kind of neat. And if it really develops and things get going and we're starting to see that, you know, that we have a real, you know, true program in place and things are really taking place, and I've got pictures and videos to show and prove, you know, we can change the discussion a little bit then. But it's kind of fun, kind of neat. We'll see how that goes. So next, as many of you know, the Fee Beekeeper is now off to college. I've been trying to get her on for a while. She's just a busy young lady. So what I'm thinking about doing is just trying to get an episode where I'll just have all the girls on like a group call, and we'll just get everybody to update us on where they are and what's going on with them. And that way, those of you who don't know, you know, the other two, you know, Phoebe, but you don't know the other two. So we'll get them on and you can get introduced to them and they can tell you what's exciting in their life and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how that goes. And let's see here. I am working right now. There's a program that I wanted to set up, and it was strictly for like the Beekeeping for Newbies crowd. I wanted to establish a new apiary, and I wanted it to be 100% dedicated to listeners and people willing to, you know, come to town. You don't necessarily have to, the way I was trying to structure it, But I wanted to set this up to where, let's say, for example, you might be a person who loves beekeeping. You want to learn about it, but you're physically not able to beekeep, or you're just really, really scared to do things and you just, you don't want to take the chance by yourself, but you'd love to have some kind of an investment in beekeeping where you could essentially buy a hive that I'm maintaining for you, basically. So I would have this small apiary, and in this apiary, and there's a couple of different plans I was thinking. One of them would be where, like, you would buy a hive and have ownership of this hive, and, you know, I would go through, do an inspection, and everybody could see the hives. It might say, like, you know, Mike S, you know, might have a tag on the hive, and people would be like, oh man, Mike's hive is kicking butt. And then I would talk to Mike by email and be like, all right, Mike, here's where we are. You saw the inspection video the other day. Do you want to expand or split? What are you thinking? You know, and then that way the person who actually owns the hive can make the decisions. I do the maintenance. And then if they decide, like, hey, you know, I'd like to come and get my hive, then they can go ahead and, you know, like the following spring or whatever we work out, they bring a nuke box. I take the frames out, drop it in their nuke box, and they go on about their way. If they paid for it, bought it, it's theirs. The other system I thought about was one where you basically have like a membership and you pay like whatever, 30, 40 bucks a month. And as part of your membership, you get a beehive and we establish the beehive and you're just, you know, you have auto pay on your thing every month and we're maintaining it. And you're like, wow, that was really cool. I had a lot of fun with all the things. Literally the program would be identical to the one I just described. It's just that you're kind of paying for it in a different way. Beginning of next season, you roll up and you're like, I want to take my hive. Or you then flip it to somebody else where I can basically buy, someone else can buy it from you. If you're like, no, I don't want to do anything with it. You know, you can split my hive and you can sell the split as a nuke. And then like we split it 50-50, right? I cover the hardware and the sale and you get the other 50 bucks or whatever, you know, whatever. I don't know. Like the reason I haven't actually brought this up till now is because I haven't figured out a way to make it work. I want it to be something that is fun and unique and something that people can really just really get excited about, but I still haven't figured out the financial part of it. So I'm like, I don't know if we're going to do it or not. We'll see what happens on that one. But I'm trying to come up with ideas for people. Primarily, I was thinking about like some of the physical crap that I had going on the past couple of years, just between my, like my knees and my back and my feet, and just, you know, a lot of stuff was going on. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm ever going to beekeep again. Like that's how bad some of the things were. And I thought, what if there was a way that I could just have somebody keep them for me? And that's where this whole thing started. But anyway, I'll come up with something at some point. I'll let you guys know. And, you know, we'll see how it all comes together. Okay, the last thing. No, wait, is it? Okay, we got two more administrative things on my list here, and then we'll jump into the good stuff. The other thing that I'm working on doing, and I'm going to be starting this, and this is one that's not going to be on the podcast. It's just going to be YouTube based. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a weekly video series that is geared towards getting ready for next year. And what we're going to do is I'll do an intro video and explain everything so everybody knows, you know, what we're trying to do. And then every week we're going to have a video. Okay, week one, we're going to start out with doing the research around local laws and ordinances to find out if it's even legal for you to keep honeybees. So here's how I go about that. Here's the websites I use, or here's the things I'm looking to find out. I'm going to talk to my neighbors. You know, anything that is required that I need to do, that's going to be like video number one. Video number two might be like, okay, I got to decide on whether or not I'm doing nukes or package bees. Here are the pros and cons between the two. In your area, you may want to go this route because of availability, or you might want to go this other route because, you know, you don't have to drive too far to buy a nuke, as an example. Then another video is going to be like, okay, let's go through a sample of a yard. Here I am in my yard right now walking around. Here's some area where I think would be a good place for bees. Here's an area where I think it would be really bad. And once a week, every week, we're going to have a video in this series. The way I originally had it wrapped up, I think it was going to be done by like February 20th or 21st, something like that. I was trying to get the first video out by around the 13th. I don't think that that's going to happen. So it may end up pushing a tiny bit. Maybe we start 1 October or somewhere in there. But this is definitely going to happen. We're going to do this. So that way you can have about a 25-week program where you're just going to go step by step. We're going to do it together. I'm going to go ahead and order, oh God, I don't even know. I'll probably just order 2. I'm going to be putting hives back at my house again this year, which I have not done in probably 4 or 5 years, something like that. But it's just, it's easier logistically for me to do that. And like every time I want to do a video and I'm at my house, I don't have stuff here and I have to try to scramble for old pictures and videos of things. And it's a pain in the butt. So I'm going to be establishing the Beekeeping for Newbies apiary here at my house. And when I say apiary, I'm not going to have like 500 hives or anything crazy, but whatever the law says is the limit, we will have that times four. Excuse me, I had a little thing in my throat. But yeah, whatever that limit is, we're going to have that, you know, we're going to hit that limit and that's going to be the end for us on that one. But I will be ordering probably five package bees, let's say. But I'm going to go through the whole process. Like I will probably record a phone call and say, hey, I'm thinking about buying some bees from you guys. Do you recommend this and this and this? That way you can have a chance to see what it's like when you call, you know, a supplier or, you know, a commercial beekeeper and see how that conversation goes. I'll show you some of the websites that I go to, some things to consider. Like you might see a price somewhere that says that these package bees are only $100 and you're like, oh, what a great deal. Somebody else has them for $150. What a huge savings. Well, the $150 ones are charging $20 for shipping and the $100 ones are charging $75 for shipping. So those are some of the things that we're going to walk you through, but we'll go through that selection. We'll go through the process of what you got to go through with your local U.S. Postal Service to go pick them up, bringing them home, getting them installed, you know, all the stuff, boom, 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 down the line. So this is, in my mind anyway, you're a brand new beekeeper. You literally have no idea what you're doing. And you're going to start watching this video series like in about a month. You'll start watching this just playing along with me, right? Boom, 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 right on down every week. Just keep doing what we're doing. And then it gets to go time and you're like, all right, we do that first inspection together. We do like everything. I just want to document the entire thing. So it'll be like, you know, a year in the life of a beekeeper, basically. So that is definitely going to happen very soon. And last on my list is I've started working on creating a master beekeeper program. This is something that has been going back and forth. I was originally going to write a book. And this week I'm actually interviewing, I got Randy Oliver and Tara Chapman are going to be on this week. But Tara wrote a book and I haven't read it yet. I'm going to try and read as much as I can between now and when I talk to her on Friday. But what I've seen of it so far, it looks pretty solid. We know that Charlotte has a great book. And I'm thinking to myself, like, these gals have put together some really good quality beekeeping educational books. I don't think I'm going to write a book. I think I'm going to take all the energy and everything that I've got wrapped into my, you know, beekeeping book. And I'm just going to squish it over into a master beekeeper program. So it's going to have the same levels, you know, apprentice, journeyman, master. We're not going to do a master craftsman. We know there's no need to, because then next thing you know, once you start going beyond the master, then you end up with like the master's apprentice, master's journeyman, master. Like you got to start. I mean, I get it, right? You know, there's only three levels. You hit the top, you know, you're an educational institution. You got to make money. How do you make money? You create more courses. I get it. But that's not what I'm planning to do. I'm going to create a program that is going to be divided up into both cognitive and psychomotor. So you're going to have to pass the written test and then you're going to have to, you know, be in person to do certain things. There's going to be potentially a video component where, you know, we can either go live, kind of FaceTime video type of thing, or record the video, send it to me, whatever. But we're going to go through and set up a program because all the research I've done, I don't see any accrediting body. It says, yes, we are the master beekeeper accrediting body for the United States or the world or whatever. It's just, hey, we have a beekeeping association. Hey, we created a program. We now have a program certification. So we're going to have the Beekeeping for Newbies Master Beekeeper program. Now, full disclosure, it may not be honored by anybody because that's another little game that people will play sometimes is they say, well, you can create your own certification all you want, but we're not going to honor it because it has not been through our blah, blah, blah program or whatever it is. Okay, fine. My mindset is we got to make things affordable and accessible to people. And if I can do them for $100 a class and you pay $300 to go from beginning to end, and all I had to do, yeah, I put some time in it. I put some energy into it. If you want to make a donation, you make a donation. Great. We appreciate it. But if you don't, you got a cheap, inexpensive class, you get the knowledge, and now you're out there beekeeping. A lot of people don't do things because the cost and the financial involvement is the barrier to entry. I don't want anybody to have to deal with that. So we're going to do the best we can to eliminate that and just have as much of a fee on top as we need to cover like the educational platforms, monthly fees, the hosting, you know, all that kind of stuff. So more to follow on that. I honestly don't expect that to get released until probably 2025. And I'm going to have some folks that I know that are going to be the auditors of this. So essentially, they're going to run through and tell me everywhere that I'm wrong and things I missed and what needs to be fixed. And we'll use that as sort of the kind of the double checking of my work to make sure I got everything right. As most of you know, I'm a big fan of the outdoors, and most of my time is dedicated to beekeeping and gardening-related discussions. But you probably did not know that one of my responsibilities as a kid was caring for our houseplants. Yes, part of my $5 a week allowance went towards making sure all of the houseplants were healthy and happy. We used to have shamrocks, Christmas cactus, philodendron, and more. Which leads us to today's podcast sponsor, and a special thanks to Palm Street. Palm Street is the best live shopping app for the plant lover community. You can buy and sell rare plants, crystals, ceramics, and other unique goods. Connect with trusted plant sellers and nurseries that sell nationwide. Shop 24/7 and with live human customer support. What I love most about Palm Street is joining a live stream where sellers walk through all the details and characteristics of the plants they're offering. You can get live answers to your questions and see what questions others have asked as well. It's such a great way to engage for buyers and sellers. And as a special offer, new users will receive $5 app credit, 10% off their first order, and up to $6 off shipping for 3 orders. Palm Street, available on Google Play or the App Store. When I was little, my grandmother had bird feeders and a bird bath in her backyard. Some of my favorite memories growing up were listening to her tell me everything she knew about the feathered friends that visited her yard daily. How amazing would it have been for us to be able to capture images and videos of that experience and to be able to share them with others? Well, if you're ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level, FeatherSnap makes Wi-Fi-enabled smart bird feeders that blend the best of technology and nature. Get a high-def glimpse of your feathered friends with a top-of-the-line camera so every visitor can be seen with clarity and detail. A unique dual-feeder bin helps attract more species, and built-in solar panels keep your camera's battery going strong. FeatherSnap's mobile app creates a truly immersive experience, allowing you to collect and organize your favorite pics and videos and earn badges along the way. Best of all, FeatherSnap offers expert-trained AI identification of more than 275 North American species thanks to their in-house ornithologist. Check them out today at FeatherSnapCam.com. That's FeatherSnapCam.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, everybody. So that wraps up all the administrative stuff about me. We're going to jump right in here. First email, this is from Matt up in Canada. So Matt said, I got a late season 5-frame nuke a couple weeks ago. It's my first colony. I have an 8-frame hive. I'm feeding sugar syrup and palm patties to boost numbers and the weight, you know, for the winter. He has a month or so before the temps drop too low to feed. His question is, with a frame feeder, there's one less frame for the bees to fill. Will this affect their ability to get through the winter? I'm in Canada, and there probably won't be anything growing until mid-April. Thanks. So here's what I said to Matt. I said, hey, Matt, do you have two deeps or just one deep? Colder climates have some very interesting challenges. As long as it gets cold and stays cold that way, bees can actually zone out and do okay on a single deep through the whole winter. Where they get messed up with on a single deep is when the weather gets cold and then warm and then cold and back and forth. Their activity level will increase during the warmer days, forcing them to consume more food and thereby lower their lifespan. Of course, they lower the lifespan, and that means fewer of them in the cluster. So with that, they die sooner, the cluster of bees gets smaller, they have to work harder to stay warm, meaning they use more resources. I say all that to stress the challenges that you may be up against this winter, but it sounds like you're doing everything right. What you could do is if you're only planning to overwinter that one box but have another one, you could replace that frame feeder with a regular frame, add a box on top of that that's empty or maybe has a few frames, then put your feeder up there. Or you could just make a jar feeder with an old jar, poke some small nail holes in it, set it on a couple of shims on top of the frames of the main deep. They'll drink it right out of the bottom and put it where it needs to go. However, all this is contingent on you having a spare deep. If you don't, you could always wait for them to cap a frame of honey, pull it out, put it in the freezer, and replace it with an empty frame. Then when it's time to pull your feeder, you replace it with the frozen frame of honey. So that was my suggestion to Matt, so hopefully that worked out for him. Number two, this one came to us out of the Discord room. If you don't take honey from the bees the first year, will you need fondant in the winter? Now, my response was, my literal response was, I think my first question is, who said that you would need fondant at all? So I haven't put fondant in a hive since my rookie season. I'm actually reading what I typed because it's just a little bit easier. But I wrote, I haven't put fondant in a hive since my rookie season when someone suggested it online. I tried it and then figured out that they didn't really care about it, didn't eat much, and I didn't need it. I think the best question is, how much honey do my bees need to overwinter in my area? Regardless of whether or not honey was taken, I would document every frame that's in the hive going into the winter, then see what's left in the spring. While every winter is different, at least you'll have a rough idea. As always, it's great to get some guidance from folks in the local bee club to see what their thoughts are. But if I had to take a shot based on my regional proximity, because he's probably, like, as the crow flies, about 150 miles due north of me, I think somewhere in the 35 to 50 pound range should be sufficient and maybe a bit overkill on the higher end of that. I've had colonies that don't get enough in the spring and have to be fed in the summer and fall, and some that have gathered enough in the spring to make it through the following winter, and just about every other scenario in between. All colonies will produce at different levels, so that documentation will come in handy as the years go by. You'll get to a point where you can have some basic general expectations of what any given colony should do in your bee yard. So that, right behind that, was the next question. How much honey is enough honey to overwinter a colony? So this one is, you know, it's really, sorry, my feather snap bird feeder just went off with a notification here, and I am muting it for the day because I've been getting all kinds of cardinals and blue jays. Well, no, lots of cardinals, a couple of chickadees, a couple of anyway, I'm like, I got the worst like ADD in the world. Okay. How much honey is enough honey to overwinter a colony? A million different variables involved here, right? So, I mean, it can be a single deep, could be plenty. You could probably pull it off. I have overwintered nucleus colonies that were, you know, five frame nucleus colonies that overwintered and they did okay. I would say that in my area, that's probably not the best thing. I think that Ian Stepler did a really good job. I actually was going back and listening to some audio a while back, and the way that he described it really made a lot of sense. He's like, the idea is to get the bees to a point where they're nice and cool and they get into this kind of zen state where they're just kind of gelled, right? They're not too cold where they're really having to work hard to stay warm. They're not all that active, and they can just kind of zone out, consume the honey as they need to, keep things warm, and just everything is kind of chill through the winter. When you have climates like mine, guaranteed between 1 and 4 days a month from, you know, November through April or March or whatever it is, yeah, probably March, we are going to have 4 or 5 days a month where the temperature is going to get over 50. Now, yeah, you might have some cold spells in January. Maybe it doesn't happen one January or whatever, but notoriously, my area has had like New Year's Day, 75 degrees, you know, and then 3 days later, it's 25 or 30 again, talking Fahrenheit, of course. But when the bees are in the cluster and they're in the zone and they're chilling and they're just relaxed, that's how you can get them to get by with less. When the temperatures warm up, they go out, they fly, they're using a lot of energy, and then they come back and they have to mellow out again. All of those things decrease their lifespan, and that decrease in lifespan then makes some of those bees die sooner. And then you have a smaller cluster, and then whoever's left has to work harder to keep things warm, and it becomes kind of like a doom loop, and it's not really great. So to answer the question, I always go back to the default answer of, you know, find out what local people are telling you. What do they experience? You know, what are the people in your bee club typically use or need to overwinter? And you're going to have to gauge it from that. Outside of that, you can kind of do, you know, some generic math kind of things and say, well, if you're between, you know, like if you're, say, from South Carolina south, maybe you only need 35 or 40 pounds. And then from Virginia to Pennsylvania, 40 to 60 pounds. Pennsylvania north, you know, 60 to 90 pounds, so, you know, something like that. But again, those things still aren't exactly right because you just don't know how many of those warmer days that you're going to have. So I'm sorry that I don't have a great answer for you on that one, but it really just depends on, you know, what's going on that winter. How much does rain affect the bees' ability to gather nectar and pollen? So the biggest thing going on is that they're not flying. Now, this is really, really challenging in the spring when you have new colonies that are ramping up, particularly with package bees. This is why I always tell people, you have some people who are on the I never feed bees club. So if you don't want to ever feed your bees, that's fine. Don't do that. But if you buy a package of bees, for the love of God, please don't just ignore them. I have installed packages of bees and had 3 days of rain follow it, and that colony never made it because they lost like half their bees. It's a stressful trip. When they get mailed to you, it's not easy on them. It's very stressful. And then to have them basically starve for 3 days, it's just too much. It's a lot to take on. So them not flying and being out and gathering is a big deal. Now, as far as the plants themselves, you know, plants can rebound pretty quickly, but prolonged rains can really disrupt that peak production time of those flowering plants. So you can have a lot of pollen can get washed away. The blooms, the blossoms themselves can get damaged. You know, there are some areas, and we've seen this particularly lately. And you know, we hear a lot more about it now because now everybody reports everything that goes on all the time around everything. And you're hearing a lot more about droughts and excessive rain and all these things. They're all pretty much equally as damaging, right? So you got to have some rain so things can grow, but then you get too much and things can't really flower and blossom and produce the pollen they need. You get no rain, the things don't grow. It's kind of, there's a lot of different things at play that can affect that balance. So I did a video on this one just the other day, actually. It was in my beekeeping tips of the day on YouTube. But the question was, I've got these big bees at the entrance and they look like the workers are fighting with them. And like, I don't know what's going on. And what's happening right now is if you're seeing workers fighting with bigger bees. And again, if you're a newer beekeeper, sometimes you don't, it's hard to put it all together. But we know that inside the hive, you have three types of bees. You have one queen, a whole bunch of workers, and some drones. Well, at the end of the season, the drones get kicked out. They have one purpose in life. Their sole purpose in life is to go out and mate with virgin queens, and then they die. That's it. If you see drones in your colonies at this time of year, they have not fulfilled their life's destiny, and they are useless. They bring absolutely no value to the colony, and the worker bees are going to kick them out. And you can watch them in the hive. They will gather around these drones and start throwing them out the door. The drone's like, what's wrong? I want to go back in. And they will keep doing it over and over until the drone finally gets the hint and goes away. So if you see your workers and your guard bees at the entrances fighting bigger bees, the bigger bees are the drones. I mean, obviously you could be in a robbing situation. So please pay attention to, you know, what's actually attacking. But drones getting kicked out at this time of year, very common. Next question, will a little hive try to rob a big hive? I wouldn't think of it like a country versus a country or like a war kind of thing. You have foragers who are always scouting for sources of food. If a forager goes and finds a very large colony, lots of bees around the entrance, lots of guards keeping an eye on things, they're not going to try to rob that colony. It can be a small colony. I mean, it could be like, you know, a 3-frame nuke or a 4-frame nuke or whatever. But if the entrance is really small and there's 20 or 30 bees out front keeping an eye on things, that forager probably doesn't want to risk their life to go in there and pick a fight. But they're going to be going for the path of least resistance. Even a really big, large colony at this time of year, they may have, the, you know, if the entrance is wide open and they've got a lot of bees working inside, you know, a good portion of the colony, probably a quarter of the bees, a third of the bees maybe are out foraging. There may be points of vulnerability or times in the day when they are a little bit vulnerable. So that's where I always tell people, keep those entrances nice and small. I use a 4-inch entrance from like, I don't know, first week of June until, I don't know, September, October timeframe. And then, you know, I'm so bad about this because I've done it all. I've done no entrance, just wide open all winter long before. I've done the small, like 3/4 inch entrance. I've done the 4-inch entrance. They all work. It's just a matter of what's going to be right for your environment. I think if you said you can only use one, what are you going to do? I would use that like 3/4 inch entrance. But back on the robbing subject, it's not so much big colony versus small colony. It's, is your colony big enough and strong enough and your entrance managed well enough to prevent attempts at robbing? And then on the flip side is your colony so small that they cannot defend themselves from robbers? I wouldn't look at it as like a big colony versus small colony because it's really just the foragers versus the guard bees, essentially. If I'm planning to leave a super on overwintering, what's the process for fall feeding? I've heard you never feed with supers on. Do I steal it and hide it in the garage while I feed them? Or do they not need feed if I leave honey? So my answer was, you wouldn't want to feed with honey supers left on that are meant for extraction and human consumption. However, if you're planning on leaving it on for the bees, you know, for them to overwinter already, then it wouldn't matter. You just want to make sure that you're not extracting any leftovers in the spring. So one thing that you could do is, you know, you could mark the frames themselves if you wanted to. Now, in general, what I would say is, if the super is on, you're not going to know that if you say, oh, this frame is full, so that's all good honey, but the other ones aren't, so I'll mark the other ones. Well, you don't know when something might get removed that's actual honey and replaced with something that's sugar syrup. So what I would say is, if you have a super on there and you're planning to leave it over winter and you're feeding them, that's fine, but don't plan on taking anything from that for yourself in the spring. All right, next question. With winter approaching here, I'm curious if you think it would be a bad idea to swap around my frames to try to entice my hive to fill up some of the frames they have left, or if it's too close to fall, winter, would it create too much work for them? Just running one deep right now for brood, but they really don't seem to want to do much on the outside frames. So my suggestion here is they're going to put things where they want them to be. So they're only going to draw out new comb on a flow, whether it's natural or man-made. So if the flow is on, or if you're feeding and you're seeing brood, moving a frame from the outside to the middle and seeing if they'll draw that up, you know, and put some brood there, it certainly is an option. But you really have to be cautious at this time of year, because that flow and the activity in the fall can drop off really suddenly as the cold weather comes in. And it's just, you know, one day you see everything is looking great, and then all of a sudden it's cold and that's it and it's over. And, you know, the fall flow, a lot of people have this mindset, either because they're new or they've been misinformed, that like the fall is like the spring. I've never seen a fall flow that's ever been anywhere near comparable to a spring flow. I've had some falls where we basically get nothing and it's just a big nothing show. So I don't count on it for a whole lot. I really like to see my bees have everything they need by, you know, July, August timeframe, if possible. But yeah, if you move that frame to the inside, then they draw up a quarter or a half of it, and then they don't do anything else with it. Now they've got all of this space in the middle, and you know, the bees are going to climb, they're going to climb into empty cells and pack themselves in as far as part of their clustering. So you really want everything that is particularly in the middle of that brood chamber to be fully intact. Just let them put things where they want to in the way that they want to, and worry about getting them to draw more comb in the spring when resources are abundant and there's a flow on and all that kind of good stuff. All right, last question of the day today. Hey, Jeff, you mentioned the vented cover that you use. I'm curious because I'm playing around with venting. Will the bees try to patch it up with propolis if it's not done a certain way? So this is a great question. You've heard me talk about it many times. Honey Run Apiaries, they have what they call the 8 or 10 frame. Sorry, I'm getting ready to get yelled at by a cat. What's that, buddy? He just needs some food. Anyway, yeah, it's the 10-frame vented inner cover, I think they call it. I've got links for it on the website. I've got a video for it on YouTube. Or actually, I have links and videos for it on YouTube, so you can check it out there if you're interested. But just like a regular inner cover, it has that kind of handle in the middle, that ovular-shaped kind of hole. And when you get it from them, they also send a piece of hardware cloth that you can just drop right in the middle there. And it's particularly useful for two things. One, it keeps the bees from leaving the inside of the hive, coming up into that space and drawing up comb, trying to use that space in any way, shape, or form for any purpose, which is not what it's designed for. It's designed to be able to pull the warm air out and let it disperse left, right, front, and back, and hopefully have some good, you know, cooler air flowing from bottom to top. The second purpose is so that they don't also go up into that space when you put the insulation in. So it comes with about 2.5-inch foam insulation, and you're going to want to put that in, you know, like at this time of year. I usually put mine in towards the latter inspection of the year. So it's usually like late September, early October, something like that. You'll go ahead and insert that piece of foam insulation. But I leave the piece of hardware cloth over that hole year round. And yes, the bees will propolize some of it shut. usually they'll kind of block about a third of it or so. I've never had them completely cover it up, but they do get in there and close it up a little bit. I just ignore it and keep on going. As long as there's still airflow coming, you know, coming through, I don't worry about it. You can always cut a new piece of hardware cloth, you know, every spring if you want to, and just replace it with that. Well, folks, like I said, I do apologize. This is a much overdue episode here. I probably should have mentioned this earlier because I don't know who actually stayed on for the whole show here today. But this Tuesday, I'm interviewing Randy Oliver. Randy, man, super good guy. But I reached out to him back in June. He's like, yep, Jeff, no problem. We can get up, you know, we can catch up. Just let me know. And I got busy. I had so much going on. So I finally caught back up with him, you know, a week or two ago. He's locked in. So we're going to interview him on Tuesday. And then on Friday, we've got Tara Chapman. So she's the founder or co-founder, I can't remember off the top of my head, of Two Hives Honey. They're down in Manor, Texas, just outside of Austin. So she has a book coming out. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a little bit of she actually has a very interesting history. And I'm not sure how much I'm going to get out of her. I'm not going to press her on it. That's her business. But I'm really, really excited about catching up with her on Friday. And then if you know Edian Tardif, he is like the king of the Yukon beekeeping. This guy has like, he's like the IT. I think if I remember correctly, he has like a mining background, but he has all of these sensors and different things he puts in the hives to monitor everything. He's got a system down there for overwintering and monitoring that is really, really exceptional. It's really, really cool. I caught up with him a couple of days ago as well. And we're going to work something out with him most likely at the end of the month. So between now and the 1st of October, hopefully you will have heard from all three of them. I also was chatting with a professor who runs a master beekeeper program at a university here in the U.S. We're trying to work something out to get him on. I don't want to mention the name yet in case it doesn't all come together. But we might have. So we got a lot of cool folks getting ready to come on and join us. So that is all that I got for you today, folks. Please join me over there on the YouTube channel. Like I said, just create a little playlist, hit autoplay, subscribe, and just let it run constantly. And that'll be really greatly appreciated. But outside of that, take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you. There's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.